This is Morning Edition on NHPR. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is the New Hampshire News Recap. State lawmakers are considering a group of bills that would create new requirements for people looking to register to vote. Now, if they become law, New Hampshire would be among the strictest states in the country when it comes to voter registration. NHPR's Todd Bookman has been following these bills, and he joins us now. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning, Rick.
Todd, why are lawmakers looking to change New Hampshire's current voter registration system?
Well, the argument is that the current system has a gap in it and that that gap could be exploited. So under current law, the way it works is that new voters who show up at the polls on election day to register, they're allowed to sign a sworn affidavit if they don't have certain documents with them. So, for example, you may show up with a driver's license and a utility bill, and that's good enough to prove your identity, that you're 18 and older, and that you maybe live in the town or the city. But those two documents don't prove that you're a U.S. citizen also, which is sort of the last requirement to vote in New Hampshire. And so the state allows you to sign this legally binding form, sworn affidavit, to attest that you're a U.S. citizen. And there are criminal penalties if you lie on that form. And even after the fact, the Attorney General's office has prosecutors sort of look through all the people that sign these forms. They try to confirm that the folks who sign them are who they say they are. But the issue is that there are always a small number of people that the Attorney General can't confirm one way or the other after the fact. And the issue that Republicans have is that, you know, those folks may have been eligible. They may not be. Their votes count either way. So that's kind of the perceived gap in the current system.
And how many of those votes do we see in any given election? What's the average there?
We only have sort of older data. 2016, 2017 roughly is the period that we have most recent data for. And there were something like 230 people that the Attorney General's office couldn't locate after the fact. You know, that's a tiny fraction of a percent of the hundreds of thousands of people who vote in the state each year. So it's a small number. But Republicans would say, you know, any voter that doesn't actually prove their eligibility is a problem because, you know, the goal here, they would argue, is that we need confidence in the system. We need confidence that every voter was qualified to vote. The flip side of that argument is that there's zero sort of proof that there's widespread fraud, that people are actually taking advantage of the system.
So what are these bills that are in process now actually proposing?
Right. So there's this pair of bills. They essentially both do the same thing, and they would remove the sworn affidavit process altogether. So everyone who registers for the first time in the state of New Hampshire would need to have their documents in hand. So you need to prove those four things: age, identity, residency, and U.S. citizenship. And it's that last one that Democrats and some voting rights groups say is just, it's just too far. It's too high a burden.
Their argument, I imagine, is, you know, some folks just don't have easy access to, you know, these citizenship documents that they would need.
Right, right. You know, a lot of people don't walk around with their passport or their birth certificate. If you've moved a lot, you may not know where those things are. A lot of people simply don't have a passport or don't know to bring it to the polls. You know, you might think that a water bill and a driver's license is enough to cast a ballot. But then we've got issues with, you know, women who get married and who now have a new name, which doesn't match their birth certificate. So there's just this fear that this is going to disenfranchise very eligible voters, people who just don't know or hear about this new rule change and show up on election day, you know, thinking they've got their ducks in a row and just simply don't.
Right. And for people who have lived in the same address for many years, maybe this wouldn't be an issue. But of course, if you're fresh to the state, you're a college student, that kind of thing, this could be a real burden.
Exactly. And again, this is only for first-time voters
right.
At the polls. So if you're already a registered voter in the state of New Hampshire, you don't need to bring your passport to vote.
Sure.
I don't want to get that message out there.
Right. Now, we've yet to hear from Governor Sununu on this, but earlier this week, the Secretary of State, Dave Scanlon, did publicly talk about these bills for the first time. What did he have to say?
Yeah, this was interesting. This is the first time we've heard from Scanlon. He's the state's top election official. And during the hearing, he signaled his support for these changes. He said that he believes requiring, you know, proof in hand of all of these certain categories is reasonable. He didn't view it as voter suppression. That was the term he used. And he says the system, you know, is workable. There's a bit of a time crunch here. If these become law later this month, you know, the bills go into effect immediately. So that means the September primary, you know, local election officials would need to be trained in this new system. But the thing about Scanlon giving his sort of tacit approval to these bills is that it, in a sense, gives Sununu cover to sign these bills. The governor has said repeatedly he's not looking to make any major changes to voting laws, you know, but in a way you could argue that, you know, if Scanlon is approving on, you know, giving his approval to this, then that gives the governor sort of approval and cover to sign these as well.
Yeah. So what happens next?
So not to get too far in the weeds here, but there's one version of this bill that's already on the governor's desk. It cleared the Senate earlier this year. It cleared the House, I think, by it was either 3 or 4 votes, a narrow passage. So Sununu has that version on his desk already. There's another version of the bill which includes the creation of a hotline so that on election day, a local voting official could call this hotline in theory, and there would be state officials there on the other side answering phone calls. Those folks would have access to various databases. And so if you've got somebody who doesn't have a certain form of identification or citizenship proof, you know, state authorities would sort of be looking people up in real time to try to prove that, you know, more likely or not, these people are who they say they are,
right,
and that they're citizens. And so that version of the bill will come up for a final vote next Thursday.
All right. We'll be watching for more of your reporting. NHPR's Todd Buchman. Todd, thank you.
Thank you, Rick.
You can find more of his work at our website, as always, at nhpr.org. Now, New Hampshire saw a significant increase in food insecurity between 2021 and 2022. That is according to some new data we got from a report from Feeding America. It's a national anti-hunger nonprofit. I want to bring in NHPR's Kate Dario, who has been following this, and she's been talking about what local anti-hunger advocates have been saying about this data in the state. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning.
What kinds of resources are out there for people who are hungry in New Hampshire?
Yeah, so the most important resource is SNAP, which stands for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which most people might call food stamps. So basically that functions like a debit card that you can use at most food retailers in the state. And it's just additional money to help buy groceries. And in New Hampshire, you can use it at a lot of local farms and farmers markets. And it is a really important resource in combating hunger. And then also there's the charitable food system. So the New Hampshire Food Bank has about 400 distribution sites across the state. And those can really help people, particularly who might be in an emergency situation and might need to get food on the table immediately.
So this data is a couple of years old, but what are you hearing from advocates and from people who are working at these food banks? Are they seeing this increased demand continuing?
Yeah, exactly. So this data is from 2022, but the advocates I spoke with said that they are still really seeing high demand. Kind of the working hypothesis is that, the COVID-19 pandemic created a lot of economic conditions that, made it harder to kind of pay for food and to, feed families. And a lot of that relief, you know, there were additional waivers from the government. Those have expired, but those conditions have persisted. So, you know, people are still seeing stagnant wages and stubborn inflation. And so demand is really high. The New Hampshire Food Bank saw an increase in demand this spring just from March to April, they told me.
I know for food growers in New Hampshire, last year was really tough. Farmers had a tough time. Extreme temperatures wiping out entire crops. Flooding was bad for some areas as well around New England. How are things for farmers this year, Kate?
Yeah, so what I've heard so far, so good. This was a pretty mild winter that didn't really have any extreme events that impacted most farmers. Last year, there were events that took out entire crops like peaches and apples. And I've been hearing that crops like those are in great conditions right now. People have been saying that they have almost too many apples right now, which is a good problem to have for a lot of farmers. Farming is a situation that can change on a dime, but people are feeling pretty excited about where their crops are. Strawberry season is about to start in New Hampshire, and a lot of local growers are excited to be able to have people come out to their strawberry patches, especially a few of the farmers I spoke with lost most or all of their strawberries last year. So they're hoping that this will be a summer that they can maybe, you know, make up some of the loss that they experienced last year.
Yeah, after a rough season, they need it. Absolutely. That'd be good news. I want to turn to something else that you've been following as well this week. Kate, graduation at Dartmouth College scheduled to take place this weekend. Students arrested during campus protests against Israel's war in Gaza have been banned from the site of the main ceremony. But now graduating students will be allowed to attend. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So basically, the people who were arrested on May 1st, part of the conditions of their bail is that they cannot access certain places on Dartmouth's campus, most notably the Dartmouth Green, which is, if you've ever been to Dartmouth, is like the main quad and really the center of campus. And that's where the graduation happens. So, you know, for the 14 students who are graduating who were arrested, it's been unclear for the past month if they've been able, if they would be able to participate in their own graduation, because the conditions of their bail is that they cannot access the green where the ceremony would be happening. So the students and faculty I spoke with said that there was a lot of uncertainty over the past few weeks about what exactly would happen. But last week, the conditions of bail were amended for the 14 graduating students so they can access the green this weekend. And, you know, a student I spoke with said, you know, it might sound trivial to not be able to go on a specific quad on campus, but that is the main hub of Dartmouth life and of college life. And they said that, you know, it took a toll on their last month of college and made it harder for them to kind of engage with their college community. So this is a welcome change, I think, for graduating seniors.
What about the students arrested who will not be graduating this weekend?
Yeah, so the conditions of bail were not changed for anyone other than the students who were graduating. So for underclassmen, they cannot attend graduation, you know, to watch their friends graduate or if they have family members graduating. And also for the two faculty members who were arrested, they also can't attend graduation and participate in the ceremony at all. And also, I just want to note that the conditions of bail were only changed for the graduating seniors for June 8th and 9th, so Saturday and Sunday. So we're recording this on Friday morning. They still cannot go on the Dartmouth Green. So this is a pretty small change. But it will allow them to participate in graduation.
One thing before you go, Kate, before we leave, I want to ask you about this. The state announcing this week that an invasive species of caterpillar has been found in New Hampshire for the first time in 75 years. What are these insects and where do they come from?
Yeah, so brown-tailed moth caterpillars are a toxic insect that can cause a poison ivy-like rash if you touch them. They came over from Europe unintentionally in the 19th century and kind of spread around New England and up to the Atlantic coast in Canada. And there was a huge, massive public works program in the 20th century to really reduce their habitat because they are toxic to humans. And that was a really successful project. It reduced their kind of residency to just along a small sliver of along the coast in Maine. But something odd has been happening in the past couple of years. They've been expanding and moving south. The state entomologist that I spoke with said they don't suspect it's climate related just because of the conditions that kind of help these specific insects thrive. But regardless of why, they are moving south and have been found in New Hampshire for the first time in 75 years.
Primarily along the seacoast?
Yes, they were found okay. On Star Island, so kind of out in the Gulf of Maine.
All right, we'll be on the watch out for that. And again, if you touch them, what happens? You can get an itchy rash, like pretty much like poison ivy.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so watch out for that. Kate Dario is a reporter for NHPR. Kate, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
You can read more of her work and all the stories that we talked about this morning at nhpr.org. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is NHPR.